How did you conclude that King George III had a mental condition rather than the physical condition of porphyria?
So the idea that King George suffered from porphyria was first put forward in the 1960s by a pair of psychiatrists called Richard Hunter and Ida McAlpine, who happened to be mother and son, not that that's relevant. And actually, the overturning of that diagnosis dates back a little bit longer than the work we've just published in PLOS One, and is attributable to one of the co-authors on the PLOS One article, Professor Peters, who's a retired physician, a very distinguished physician, an expert in metabolic disorders, including porphyria. And he sort of smelt a rat in this whole story about King George. And he started looking into the strength of the evidence on which this diagnosis, supposed diagnosis of porphyria, was put forward. And he concluded in a very well-argued paper in the History of Psychiatry in 2010 that Hunter and McAlpine had helped built this whole case rather carefully and in a sort of quite scholarly way, but using very flawed materials, which were sort of glued together with very specious reasoning and built on absolutely no foundations whatsoever. And just to mention a few highlights, the mental symptoms, which were supposed to be the, this madness of King George, which has been attributed to porphyria in the media and on film and is very widely accepted, these symptoms are not really typical of porphyria at all. And then the other symptoms that Hunter and McAlpine brought forward in defense of their hypothesis were things like this discoloration of the urine, which was grossly exaggerated, was actually the wrong color, and was in some cases based on a misreading of the manuscripts on which they based their arguments, and actually ignored a lot of evidence which didn't support discoloration of the urine. So there was a lot of wishful thinking behind this. And the idea that that the computer analysis that that I and my colleagues, including Professor Peters, have recently published in PLOS One, have sort of confirmed that porphyria was not the diagnosis is unfortunately not the case. What we did was to show, using the characteristics of his written record of the letters that he wrote daily, including during these periods of mental illness, that these letters, the texts of these letters, were very, very different from the texts of the letters that he wrote during periods of health, which constituted the majority of the early part of his reign. So there was nothing strictly diagnostic about the computer analysis, the machine learning that we did in this study. What we were doing was merely confirming that there was a mental change which corresponded to the historical record, which describes these periods of illness that he had in 1788 and again in the early 19th century, the end of his reign.
You mentioned these mental illnesses.
Yeah.
What does acute mania entail?
So acute mania is a condition of hyperexcitability, let's think of some more words for it. It's a condition where the person gets very enthusiastic, very excited, very pressured, is full of energy, mental and physical. So it sounds like a nice thing, but it's probably an exaggeration of a normal phenomenon. And it is taken to the extremes of is sometimes taken to such extremes that those behaviors become damaging to the person involved. So in a modern context, for instance, somebody with acute mania might start talking very rapidly, might start talking in an indiscreet fashion, might develop a lot of kind of sexual energy, a lot of disinhibition. Might take risks that he otherwise wouldn't have taken, he or she might otherwise not have taken, might spend money that he or she hasn't got on a credit card. Obviously, that wouldn't apply to King George. But a lot of those behaviors, including the rapid thinking and the physical and mental excitability were very clearly described in the King George record.
How is that regarded in comparison to, say, bipolar disorder?
Bipolar disorder is a condition where episodes of mania, perhaps not quite as extreme as the mania that that would be seen in acute mania, but episodes of manic behavior, episodes of this kind of hyper-excitability alternate with periods of profound depression. So it goes from pole to pole, it's bipolar. Whereas in King George's case, the idea is that this is a much rarer condition of unipolar recurrent mania.
Okay, well, when are these episodes of mania most evident?
In King George, the best described episode of mania was began in the autumn of 1788 and finished over May or June of the following year. These episodes are well described in the medical records. A family of psychiatrists was brought in to try to manage these very worrying behaviors. And in fact, there was almost a constitutional crisis in that a regency bill was put before Parliament, but recovery, fortunately for King George, took place before the regency bill had time to be passed. So he remained king after he recovered. This is the main period of so-called madness, which was described both in the medical notes and in the diaries of his courtiers like Fanny Burney. But then there were other periods as well that were perhaps not quite so well described. There was a period in the early 19th century, and then less perhaps well known is that when the regency was declared in 1810, this was because of profound dementia that affected King George in the last 10 years of his life. And it's an open question, a fascinating question, whether the periods of mania, if that's what they were the precursor or was somehow created a kind of toxic environment which predisposed King George to develop a dementia in the last 10 years of his life.
One last question. How did he reign for nearly 60 years suffering from this condition?
Well, if it had been a that's an excellent question. If it had been a physical condition or a metabolic condition like porphyria, then he almost certainly would never have survived until the age of 81, because porphyria, before the advent of the treatments that are now available, was a condition that significantly shortened people's lives. And 81 is a very good age to have survived in the 18th and 19th centuries. It wouldn't have been a physical illness because that would have limited his lifespan. And mental illnesses, apart from the risk that they pose to suicidality, shouldn't necessarily be a risk factor for reduced life expectancy. So clearly, he was a physically robust individual, and until the end of his life, mentally robust as well.